March 12th. Today, something horrible happened. I was trying to take a picture of the daffodils blooming in the backyard when somehow I was looking at myself in the iPhone screen. Myself, looking down, neck waddle and crepey chest in full view. It's a miracle I didn't drop the phone and run screaming into the house. The thing is, I know that I'm 64, but I don't feel 64. Not mentally, anyway. Through a combination of good genes and a love of daily walks, I'm pretty healthy. Sure, I could lose 15 pounds. My doctor says 25, but my doctor lives in a dream world. Okay, and some days my knees hurt for no particular reason. If I didn't dye my hair, it would be mostly gray. And one day, I'm going to let it go all the way gray. I really am. There's nothing to be done about my hands. Those age spots aren't going anywhere. But for some reason, they don't bother me so much. Maybe because my hands look like my mother's hands. There's something comforting about seeing them. Anyway, all of this to say, it is a shock to see what I actually look like to other people. Sheila argues that nobody really looks like their photographs, especially not the ones taken from below the chin, since no one but little kids see us from that angle. I guess she's right, but there's no getting past the fact that my neck is over and done with. It was never a spectacular neck to begin with. It's actually kind of short. And now, it's like a straight line runs from my chin to my collarbone. Maybe that's an exaggeration, but not by much. And then there's the waddle, which I hate. The irony here is that as my looks have been going south, so many other things about myself have changed for the better. I used to be the person who was afraid to ask a question in a quilting class because I didn't want to look dumb. Way back in college, there were times when a professor would ask for an opinion, but I was scared to give mine. And then someone else would say exactly what I was thinking, and everyone would nod in agreement. Now I happily give my opinion, even in a group of strangers. In general, I'm less concerned about embarrassing myself in public. Sure, I don't want to submit a wildly bad quilt to the Peacemaker show, but when I think about it rationally, I know that I don't make wildly bad quilts. I'm a solid intermediate quilter who could probably step it up to being an advanced quilter if I tackle a few new skills. I have a great sense of color, and just as importantly, maybe more importantly, I understand the value of color value. I'm in the planning stages of the Sam and Katie portrait quilt. Sandy Belford is going to come over Wednesday night to drop off her projector. I can plug my computer into it and then project a picture onto a piece of paper taped to the wall. Daryl has been fooling around with the picture in Photoshop to get rid of any extraneous elements, the recycling bin that's in the background, that sort of thing. I'm a little nervous about tracing the picture, but Sandy says I can hold on to the projector for as long as I need it, so if I mess up the first time, I can keep trying. That's another great thing about being older. When I was younger, if I struggled in my first attempt to do something, I assumed I couldn't do it. Now I know that it can take days, weeks, even years to learn how to do something right. Just one more wonderful life lesson brought to you by quilting. March 16th. So, I casually mentioned to Daryl last night that I thought Carol Woolsey might have a teeny tiny crush on him. He refused to believe me and even accused me of trafficking in stereotypes. Just because Carol is a middle-aged, divorced woman doesn't mean she's going after other women's husbands, he scolded me. That's beneath you, Marnie, I shrugged. I heard how she talked to you last week when the charity committee met over here. It had a definite flirtatious vibe. Yeah, I noticed that too, Daryl admitted. But then I realized that she's the sort of person who flirts with everyone. Do you know what I mean? It's like she's trying to charm everyone in the room. She definitely wasn't trying to charm me, I pointed out. But you've known her a long time. You knew her pre-divorce, so maybe she wants to keep you at a distance. How can she be the new Carol if there's someone in the room who remembers the old Carol? I guess he had a point, but I wasn't going to fully accept his theory until I ran it past Sheila, which I did this morning at Linway's Diner. Maybe he's right, I told her, but maybe he's not. Maybe Carol really is after him. Sheila rolled her eyes at me. Carol isn't after Daryl. She just likes a little male attention. She paused and then exclaimed, Hey, Carol and Daryl, that rhymes. Now it was my turn for eye rolling. I didn't actually know you in seventh grade, but I'm starting to get a feel for what that might have been like, I told her. I was fabulous in seventh grade, Sheila insisted. I was devoted to Fruit Stripe Gum and David Cassidy. That makes me wish we had been friends in seventh grade, I admitted. We could have started a David Cassidy fan club. I wrote him love letters every week, and he sent me an autographed picture. He never answered my marriage proposal, though. Sheila tore open a sugar packet and dumped it into her coffee. Do you remember the first Partridge Family, Chris? I always wondered what happened to him. I mean, he was a really good Chris. His dad got a new job and they moved after the first season, I informed her. I looked it up. Can you imagine a family doing that now? Giving up Hollywood because the dad got a promotion at his insurance company? It wouldn't happen, Sheila said. The dad would never get the promotion in the first place because he'd be spending most of the workday on Twitter and Instagram trying to become a social media influencer. I took a sip of my coffee. How did we get here? I mean, where did this conversation begin? I don't remember anymore. Sheila's face brightened. Carol and Daryl and their torrid love affair. Which doesn't actually exist, I reminded her. Whatever Carol's up to, Daryl isn't engaging. At least he doesn't seem to be. Honey, the last thing you have to worry about is Daryl going astray, Sheila said. I mean, I know you know that. I do know that, I agreed. Well, he might leave me for Nicole Kidman. Which is just weird, Sheila said. She's so ethereal. I think of Daryl as more of a meat and potatoes man. I'm not sure how to take that. Am I meat or potatoes? Or both? Sheila reached over and gave me a patronizing pat on the hand. You, my dear, are a scrumptious little French fry. So, let me ask you a quick question. Ask away. If I ordered a piece of pie, would you split it with me? Sheila was already signaling the waitress as she spoke. Of course I would, I said. You know I would. Then I better order two. Chocolate cream sound okay to you? I rolled my eyes, like she even had to ask. March 20th. Sheila had lunch yesterday with horrible Kevin, and she came home with a ginormous check. Now, if I can just keep her from giving most of it to Emily. Sheila has four daughters, and three of them have launched beautifully into adulthood. Suzy, the oldest, had a good career as a city planner before deciding to stay at home with the kids. Grace is a web designer, and yes, she's a little on the neurotic side, but she's extremely thoughtful. She sends me a card every year on my birthday, for instance, and insists that Marco call me Aunt Marnie. Carrie, the youngest, is a darling. She makes terrible choices when it comes to men, but she's wonderful about calling Sheila every Sunday for a long chat. Sometimes they watch movies on Netflix together. Carrie in Boston, Sheila at home, and FaceTime each other while they're watching. And then there's Emily. A lot of people would say Emily is the most exceptional of Sheila's children, and they'd be right in more ways than one. In elementary school, Emily tested off the charts for intelligence. She was reading so far above grade level when she was 7 that she was put in her own reading group for the rest of elementary school. She skipped 5th grade, which Sheila now regrets. On top of all that, she was always a very pretty girl. All of Sheila's girls are attractive, but Emily is a real head-turner. So she got lots of attention from all kinds of people for all kinds of reasons. In my experience, that never works out well in the long run. I've always wondered if Emily's life would be different if Kevin hadn't left. I mean, of course it would have been different. Not just for Emily, but for all of the girls. But Emily was 9 when Kevin decided he was suffocating and had to go find himself. And the two of them were close. "She's the son he never had," Sheila would say. And it was true in its way. Emily was a tomboy when she was a kid, and she and Kevin went fishing and camping. They went to baseball games in the summer and football games in the fall. And then, one day, Kevin was gone. All the girls were devastated, but Emily, it was a different level of devastation. Plus, she didn't know how she fit into the family after Kevin was gone. Her role as the son Kevin never had disappeared the minute he walked out. It took a few years for the really bad behavior to manifest itself, but when it did, yikes. Boys, alcohol, drugs, all of it. She dropped out of high school twice. And through it all, Kevin was mostly absent. He was living in a camper van, traveling the country. The world's oldest lost boy. So Sheila shouldered it all. Both sets of grandparents helped financially, bless their hearts. They helped Sheila pay for Emily's therapy, and some months they helped Sheila pay the mortgage. I think everyone breathed a collective sigh of relief when Emily headed off to college, especially since no one was convinced she'd want to go to college or even get into one. In spite of her amazing intelligence, her grades weren't great. She did fine at Bowling Green, got a degree in English Lit, and then spent 5 years traveling around the country managing some indie rock band. She spent the last 5 years in Cincinnati as the production manager at a recording company. Sheila says it pays fairly well, but what Emily really wants to do is start her own label. This appears to be her boyfriend's idea. Is it a good idea? Probably not. Emily has never dated men who have good ideas. "Did Kevin say he wanted you to give Emily money?" I asked Sheila when she called yesterday afternoon to report on her lunch date. "He didn't specify what I should do with it," Sheila said. "But Emily has always wanted to start her own company. She's been talking about it for years." "Yes, and if it's a good idea, she can find financial backing for it," I argued. "She shouldn't be taking money from you. She's 31 years old, for crying out loud. She's been taking money from you her entire adult life. $500 for new tires, $300 supposedly for a winter coat, but what did she do with it? Oh yeah, new tattoo."
I know. I just think money that comes from her dad.
She can ask Kevin for money directly if she wants to start her own business so badly. Long pause.
"You know she doesn't talk to Kevin. She'd never ask."
"Sheila?" Another long pause. You know what I'm going to say, right?
I know, I know. I can't solve Emily's problems for her.
Not anymore, I said.
Maybe you never could, but you tried.
Now it's time for you to take care of yourself and let Emily take care of herself. Pause. Sigh.
I know, but you know.
She's your kid, I supplied. I know. And I do know. But out. I know. March 23rd. I got an invitation in the mail today. Turns out Jessica's mom is throwing Jessica a baby shower. This ought to be good. The shower is going to be in April because Abby and her life partner, Billy, are going to Prince Edward Island in June and won't be back until October. Jessica's due date is September 19th. It's going to be, wait for it, a cocktail party. A baby shower cocktail party. Katie's coming up from Atlanta because she can't stand the idea of missing it. I'm going to look for a cocktail dress at this thrift shop I love in Five Points, she told me on the phone yesterday. Something super Jackie O, and silver slingbacks with 3-inch heels. You will remember to buy a present while you're out shopping for your outfit, won't you?
Buy a present?
Katie sounded shocked. When do quilters ever buy presents for baby showers? I laughed. Point taken. But that means you better start making that quilt now.
Already on it, Katie told me.
I'm doing the most adorable modern flying geese pattern. I texted Dad a picture and he gave it his approval. He even suggested a color palette, dove gray and marigold yellow orange. Works for a boy or a girl. Wait a minute, she's not having twins again, is she? No, there's only one in there this time. But Jessica and Sam don't want to know the sex. I think it exhausts Jessica to think about having another boy. Katie laughed. I bet. She paused for a moment. You know what's strange? I still can't wrap my head around the fact that Sam's a dad. It's like, I don't know. It's like, who would give Sam that kind of responsibility? Don't they know he's the kid who couldn't keep a goldfish alive for more than 3 days? I laughed, and then stopped short. Wait a minute, you texted Dad for a pattern approval, and not me? Well, yeah, I mean, he's into modern quilts, and you're not. I'm not into modern quilts, I protested. I like modern quilts. Maybe not as much as you and Dad, but I do like them. I think they're lots of fun. Yeah, right. Katie laughed. Let's face it, Mom, you're stuck in your ways. I am not. I could feel my cheeks growing hot. I'm adventurous. You're a grandmother, Katie filled in. And you know what they say about modern quilts. They're not your grandmother's quilts. Okay, I'm starting to steam up again as I write this. Deep breaths, Marnie, deep breaths. I managed to mostly regain my composure by returning to the topic of the baby cocktail party. I don't know what I'm going to wear to the shower, I said. Did you see that it's a parsnip? I don't think my old wrap dress is going to do it. I could look around online and send you some ideas, Katie offered. You're a size 12, right? Sort of, I hedged. On a good day. Got it. I'll find something that shows off your legs, Katie promised. Should we wear hats? What do you think? I look terrible in hats, I told her. My head's too big. Mine too, Katie said. But I'd really love to wear a hat. Oh well, maybe next life. After I got off the phone, I started dinner, still perturbed by Katie saying that I'm stuck in my ways. First of all, I'm 64. I can be stuck in my ways if I want. But I'm not. Would a woman who's stuck in her ways watch Breaking Bad? Sure, I hated it, but I watched it. And I read all the horrible novels that Karen Frum chooses for book club, which never have any plot and are practically impossible to follow. But I hang in there until the bitter end because I am willing to try new things, even if they're a total waste of time. And I am not against modern quilts. In fact, I need to make the new baby a quilt myself. Maybe I'll just show those modern quilters a thing or two. Thank you so much for listening to Diary of a Mad Quilter and for being a Story Guild subscriber. Keep tuning in for more quilt fiction and more quilty fun.